Hey there. Because you're listening to this podcast, we at Blue Wire want you to know this. One, we freaking love you. And two, we want to learn more about you. Help us make more content you'll love by filling out a survey you can find in the description of this podcast. You'll help us out a ton, and you'll have a chance to win a Blue Wire t-shirt, hoodie, or a pair of AirPods. We appreciate you, hope you're staying safe, and want you to enjoy this podcast.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, and with me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going great, man. Thank you to Magic Mike for the 11-month sub. We're about to have a year of subs from our original crew. So,
Mike. You can call it a year. You can call it a year, but it's kind of like the Cavs. There was a bit of a lapse there. I appreciate anyone that's
stuck
around.
But what that
around.
Means is that he didn't stop, and that's very respectable from our diehards.
I really do appreciate that, and for everyone listening on podcast, because that's the way almost everybody consumes us, we're talking about our Twitch feed. You can check us out at twitch.tv/chasedownpod if you want to check out the pod live, interact with us, all of that good stuff. But today we are talking Cavs. It feels good to be talking Cavs, Carter, because there really hasn't been a whole lot to discuss. But we found a few launching off points that I'm excited about. And the first is Stu Gotts. Shout out to Stu Gotts, who I have a poster of in my office. He broke some damn Cavs news. Far, far from a surprise, but Andre Drummond has confirmed that he will be back with the Cavs next year and that he will be opting into that player option. So not a huge shock there, but what are your thoughts and feelings there, Carter?
I think we all knew this was coming, especially in the wake of the COVID situation, where it's like there's not a lot of good. You know, we don't know where the salary cap's going to be coming. I think people are going to take, they're going to be taking their money when they can get it. So Ultimately, I think that this is the right move for Andre Drummond. I don't think it precludes anything. I think we could still trade him, take on some long term money, buy a pick, which we've talked about. They can still keep him. They could. I do think that his being here, if he is here on day one of the 2020-21 season, which is weird because it's just going to actually pretty much be the 2021 season.
It might be like baseball where it's actually contained within a calendar year, which would be a unique experience.
I think that, that does hurt Tristan Thompson's likelihood of sticking around. And it also probably, to some extent, affects the chances that they take a guy like Okongwu.
I heard mentioned was that Drummond shares representation with Wiseman, and the NBA draft is a day before when he has the option, the player option, the deadline for that. So I wonder if there's any chance that kind of factors in, whether it be for a trade, whether it be draft strategy. I don't necessarily think it's going to impact the way that they draft, but I definitely agree with kind of the thought process that Tristan becomes less likely. Although we've heard a lot that Tristan does have some willingness to come back on a smaller contract and wants the Cavs to be a real significant part of his legacy, which, I mean, it always is. But that was kind of some of the more recent news. And what we've heard so far is that the Cavs do have LaMelo Ball at the top of their draft board. So maybe that's kind of factoring into the plan, and they're not going the center route, no matter who's on the roster.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I don't know. It feels pretty unlikely that Tristan's going to take a discount to stick around. And, like, just given the cap climate, I don't know, man. It just feels like it's probably
Well, if you can only get a percentage of the cap and you're expecting things to bounce back, a one-year deal or a one-plus-one makes some sense, right? Like, you kind of have to factor in, or I guess there'd be an assumption that COVID isn't going to go beyond next season, which would be an absolute nightmare if it did. I do think that there's a possibility that because of that uncertainty, because of the fact that he has made a respectable amount of money in his career, I wouldn't necessarily be stunned if they took someone like Ball or Edwards or Hayes, if there was some way that Tristan and Drummond are both back, and maybe one of them doesn't make it through the season, but to see them both on the opening night roster wouldn't stun me.
Yeah, well, Ty Windish is in the chat, so he knows the CBA better than either of us. Can you do a sign and trade on like a one-year deal, or is there a minimum? Because like Tristan still like might want that. If he's gonna take a one-year floater while COVID plays out, maybe he still wants that sign and trade for a short deal.
Well, I mean, if it's a sign and
trade, want to do.
If it's a sign and trade at the time that he's signing, that would be happening at, like, it wouldn't be a mid-season trade. Like, you wouldn't sign him, play a couple months, and then trade him, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like the Cavs aren't going to want it because they're still going to be paying Kevin Love 30. They're going to be paying Drummond 26. They're going to be paying Nance 10, I think.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's $66 million for those three. If you take a guy like, if you take a guy like Tristan, pay him 15. It's getting pretty painful, Justin.
I highly, highly doubt if they did go that route, that they'd be paying him that much. I think what they were offering him, that the reporting was around what Nance is currently getting. So who knows? Maybe that there's some willingness there. But, I mean, the other part of the Cavs' very expensive front court is Kevin Love, which, again, that's a whole lot of money that, with Drummond back, regardless of what Tristan does, that's a ton of money tied into that front court. I want to move on to the comments that Bill Simmons had with his, I guess it's his redraftable series. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, it's on redraftables, which a lot of people have criticized as a really shitty series. And yeah, we get it. Redrafts are boring. And yeah, Simmons is a pretty easy punching bag right now. Yeah. Rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But with that said, I'm having a decent time with it. It's just nice running through the drafts, you know?
Well, this is the rare time where normally when I don't watch something, I will pretend to at least have some knowledge of it. You've done this for years with the Cavs. Sure. But when it comes to Simmons, I don't have to pretend that I have been watching. It's one of the few times that I'm actually falling on the right side.
You win, baby.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here.
I just love listening to my own voice, and Bill Simmons doesn't present me with my own voice, so I'm just not going to go down that route. But he did have a comment today that I guess went somewhat viral, saying that he wishes Kevin Love never went to Cleveland, that it's kind of been a waste of his talents. And I thought you made a real interesting point. There's been the theory of Minnesota Love for, I guess, the past 6 years. It's crazy that it's been that long. I think it's time to just accept that he isn't really capable of being that player anymore. He's very good, but he is not capable of being that player anymore.
No, I mean, the back problems happened for him early on in Cleveland.
Immediately, yeah.
Pretty much right away, and, like, a guy with limited mobility in the first place, it's just – yeah, there's a reason it never really looked right when they did force him the ball in the LeBron-Kyrie era. You know, he was always best as the spacer, the shooter, the foul drawer. That's the one thing that, like, I find annoying is, like, no, he didn't have a ton of field goal attempts at the rim because every time he posted up, he drew a foul.
He just didn't get the whistle.
but his foul rate has always been good, though. I know we like to joke that he didn't get calls against the Warriors, but, like, he's always had good foul drawing numbers, and I don't know. I just don't know what people wanted. He turned into a winning player, and they won a title. They probably would have won more if they didn't play the best team of all time, most talented team of all time. And Kyrie wasn't a crazy guy. Probably not an acceptable thing to say. If Kyrie wasn't weird and eccentric.
Yeah. Does this kind of fall into the same thing that we've talked about before where national writers will say, well, we're against tanking. We don't want teams to ever tank. But anytime a bad team hangs on to a good player and doesn't give it away for nothing to a contender, all of a sudden it's an atrocity. is it the same kind of hypocrisy that we've seen in those situations?
I don't know. I don't know if anyone cares about him anymore.
No, that's fair.
If I'm being honest, I just think Simmons sometimes, like, you can kind of tell when he's just, like, bullshitting a take on the spot.
Yeah. I think it's just...
And in fairness, we all do it.
Yeah, I think it's just I missed Minnesota Kevin Love. This would be no different, by the way, if he got traded to Golden State. I think it's just, hey, I miss when this guy was a focal point. Didn't lead to a lot of wins. It's fair to note, though, that them missing the playoffs, especially that last year, like, that is a statistical aberration. Like, he was fantastic. Their starting lineup was fantastic. The bench was dog shit, and even at that, they should have got in. It's not like he wasn't contributing to winning basketball, but I really think that that's what this boils down to. Like, I think it also ignores that Kevin Love, as just strictly a spot-up guy, was really just kind of that first year and a bit under David Blatt, and his role evolved. Like, he even had the following year where it was just he and LeBron, and he was being asked to do a little bit more, and his body was breaking down. So I think there's been smart adjustments made by Love, as well as the coaching staff, to keep him productive and keep him healthy, because that old workload isn't something that he's able to sustain anymore.
Yeah, if you'll forgive me to say a thing that I already know the answer to, but like, does no one remember the old the Korver Love two-man game that literally broke teams in half?
I know they don't,
but like, Love did stuff, and yeah. Like, he was never just a spot-up guy in those teams. He was always a capable guy who roasted switches, drew fouls, spaced the floor. Like, saying he was Ryan Anderson is just fundamentally misunderstanding what Kevin Love was, and also, if I'm being honest, kind of underrating how good at shooting Ryan Anderson was in his prime. Like,
yeah.
Anderson helped his teams quite a bit. So, like, the idea of being a rich man's Ryan Anderson that actually rebounded and drew some fouls on the inside is not the worst thing. I don't know, man. I just find it really annoying that how many negative narratives there are floating. I mean, this is a Zavac special. How many negative narratives there are floating around that those Cavs teams that by every metric were unbelievably successful.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was the artificial nature of the team running up against the Warriors. Like, that Cavs team in any other era likely has a more sustained run or has greater success. Not that they weren't successful. I mean, you make the finals four times, you win a championship, you go up against the most talented team in NBA history. That's a very successful run. Winning a conference is not a bad thing.
This is the thing, though. There's two things that play against this team historically. One, Bron stands, who, like, I think we both can agree are pretty annoying. And both have come at our throats multiple times, even though he's my favorite player ever. And two, the fact that they played in the East during peak whiny blogger era of, well, you know, like, hey, I really think the Hawks have a chance, guys. I think they got them this year, and then they would get beaten, and then we'd pretend like the Hawks weren't shit as soon as they got.
And in all fairness, I also understand, like, the Cavs almost, they amplified one of the frustrating things people seems to be frustrated with LeBron. It's always, okay, this team has better numbers or whatever the case may be, and then someone will just respond with, yeah, but LeBron. And the fact that that's true, no matter how much research, no matter how much numbers you plug in, that that has been true for the majority of his career is infuriating for people. And when they were in Cleveland, it's, okay, we're playing isolation basketball. It's LeBron, Kyrie, two-man games that some people did not enjoy watching. And then there was the whole flip the switch aspect, which it infuriated some people. I don't I understand somewhat how that can be annoying.
Can I challenge a statement you just said?
Okay, sure.
Did people not enjoy watching, or did people not want to believe in it?
I think
there is a significant difference between Maury Ball isolation and what the Cavs were doing.
No, there certainly was. And you know what? Maybe I'm lumping everybody in with a friend of the podcast, Matt Moore, unfairly here. But
Matt is so much of what we complain about, but we love him. There's no one I complain about more in the abstract than Matt, while also very, very genuinely liking him and respecting him.
Well, here's the thing. I'm okay with somebody that disagrees with me on basically every subject if I feel like where they're coming from is well-researched. And you can never
ever accuse Matt of not thinking it through.
No, no.
And whether he lands in Timbuktu, he thought about it.
Yes, absolutely. And I do think that the flip the switch aspect was annoying from people. But you know what? Those teams, when everything was clicking, and the other part of it was there were always qualifiers. There were Kyrie and Love weren't healthy. You had the regular season the following year. Okay, yes, they lost to the Warriors both times, but the first time was basically 3 days after Kyrie returned from surgery. The other one was shortly after a mutiny game, and Kyrie is still working his way back. Love had multiple midseason surgeries. Like, this was such a hard team to figure out how good they could be, like what the ceiling was, outside of just somewhat blind faith in LeBron.
You know what's weird? Why did LeBron basically take four regular seasons off? Well, like, isn't that weird? Because like, so I was at the reason I, and I know I'm taking this to a pivot that you probably weren't ready for me to take it to, but I was listening to Lowe and Arnovitz on their pod talking about defensive, all defense teams. Mm-hmm. And Lowe kind of mentioned all the numbers say LeBron needs to be in the conversation. All the numbers. I'm like, remember when we, in good faith, had a discussion about if a team could be top 15 defensively if LeBron James was on it?
Yeah, no, it's...
It's like, what the fuck, man? You could have tried a little bit harder for us.
I don't think it's a matter of trying. Like, I do think on... There were times that he was somewhat held back physically, but I think there's been an adjustment in his understanding of what he can do and what he can get away with defensively. And also, he looked fine defensively in the playoffs when he was turning things on until he ran up against the Warriors. And that combination of talent in Golden State with Kevin Durant, who has just as good of a claim as LeBron to best player in the league when he was healthy there.
If you're wrong, yeah.
I'm just saying he had a claim to it. But
yeah, not
it was an overwhelming level of talent, and LeBron was trying to, it was basically the canoe that was springing a billion leaks. Like, there was absolutely no shortage of leaks in the Cavs defense. And I think that it made things look worse than it was.
Yeah. There's also the reality that, like, if you want evidence that individual defensive metrics don't work, it's that LeBron's metrics are in the tank in mm-hmm. Cleveland for 4 years. And then you put him on a team with 5-6 plus defenders and Dwight, Danny Green, Avery Bradley, Anthony Davis. And it's like, oh, he actually gets to play free safety instead of like just hanging out in no man's land. Cause as you said, it's like, you know, a canoe with 1,000 leaks. Yeah. It's like, no wonder his metrics look better. He gets to play free safety but with a shutdown corner and a good pass rush.
Right, exactly. And this gets to what I've complained about a billion times on this podcast, and all our listeners are probably sick of me saying it, but we still are very far off when it comes to actually capturing defense and understanding defense when it comes to the NBA. As you said, You put him on the Lakers, there's no shortage of good defenders, and he looks a lot better. And just like there's no shortage of good defenders on the Lakers, there's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all of UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
That was a really nice ad read, Justin. I don't have any comments. I don't have any notes. Though I'll be honest, before we started the pod, I didn't pull up our email that tells us what our ad reads are. And I was like, shit. Is there another one that he's going to be ready for me to pick up? And there wasn't. So we're good.
You know what? I'm the point guard of this here podcast. And I would have told you ahead of time if you needed.
Bullshit.
I always lead you in the right direction. Don't act like I don't. I don't appreciate the insinuation.
Okay. Thanks, Captain.
Oh, man. Speaking of no direction, the Cleveland Cavaliers. I was curious because we had a bit of a debate in our Chase Down Discord chat, which people, if you want to be a part of that, send us a review, copy the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We'd be more than happy to welcome you into our little weird community. But Tom Ziller, friend of the podcast, he had mentioned or was comparing the Cavs' current rebuild to the 2010 and 2011 Kyrie rebuild.
Well, first, let's make sure we plug on Good Morning It's Basketball, which is one of the best newsletters in the game.
Do you want to set this one up, Carter?
Yeah, I do.
How about that?
Yeah, I'm the captain now. Ha ha.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, so Ziller, Good Morning It's Basketball, one of the best newsletters in the game. It's probably my favorite to check out. You know, like, blogging's not in the best place. The NBA writing is not in the best place. And mm-hmm. Ziller always finds the best stuff. Like, he is just a really good, like, curator of content for, like, the thoughtful basketball fans. So, big fan of Ziller. Big fan of his support of the pod. And he plugged City of Champions. So, big ups to him.
Pretty cool. Is blogging dead because I quit Fear the Sword? Is that what's happening?
That's probably what did it. The straw that broke the camel's back. And I mean a very small piece of straw. So he wrote about how, kind of compared the two rebuilds, kind of said that it's going as well as last time, mm-hmm. but without the life raft that comes with Kyrie Irving and then LeBron coming back. Yeah. And what was your take on it? Because I saw a lot of pushback on Twitter.com, but I didn't find myself wanting to push back too hard.
Yeah, I didn't want to push back too hard because I think there's more reasons for hope than he alluded to. Like, I think the fact that Kevin Porter Jr. wasn't really mentioned in the article, like, his name literally appeared once as one of the guys along, like, he was lumped in with Ante Zizic as a guy that maybe has to step up for this to be a little less bleak. Whereas I think that he's probably the highest upside guy out of the young group. But a lot of what the Cavs currently have, if you want to be optimistic, it's hope-based, right? Like, I think there's reasonable reasons to be hopeful for Colin Sexton, for Darius Garland, and Kevin Porter Jr., but the results aren't really there yet. Sexton is currently kind of in that Devin Booker zone of, all right, he's now putting up 21 points per game, he's doing it efficiently, but the wins aren't there yet. And one thing I'd say is a lot of those players that, hey, they're putting up good stats efficiently, normally those guys work out and all of a sudden winning basketball becomes part of the equation with them. Sometimes that's more talent. Sometimes that's just maturity. So I'd be a little more optimistic with him. But even though there isn't a Kyrie, it does seem like these players, there's reasons to be hopeful for them. They want to be in Cleveland, which was basically never the case with Kyrie. And I just feel like there's a little more in the cupboard and the Cavs have a little more flexibility than they had last time around.
So first off, I think that I'm glad no one's paying attention to this podcast right now, because you would be getting shredded for comparing Colin Sexton to Devin Booker.
I said he's in that Devin Booker zone, but yeah. I didn't mean to compare him to Devin Booker. I just meant a guy that puts up numbers efficiently. Yes, he's nowhere near the passer Booker is, and Booker is a much better player.
Just. Sometimes I feel like I got to check you because you go flying off the rails.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, if he was Devin Booker, I wouldn't have been advocating at some points this season for him to be a sixth man.
Yes. Fair. I just feel like, you know, the thing is, I think the luck of it all matters here. Like, it matters that after one horrible year, Kyrie fell into the Cavs' lap last time. Yeah. But even then there was bad luck, right? You know, you win the first overall pick in a draft where it was like Nerlens, Oladipo, and then obviously
Alex Anthony Bennett Lynn,
Anthony Cody Bennett was Zeller. Their fault, but it's not like it was a good draft. And this year, or in this rebuild, it seems like almost a similar feeling to like how it felt for the Sixers for a while, where it was like, you know, it was like every year during the process, the best player on the board was by a significant margin a center.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I guess we'll take another one. And like, that's kind of the way it feels with the guards right now. And the fact that, you know, they've done all this suffering for Sexton, who, well, I guess they really didn't suffer to get Sexton. He was kind of the first year. But yeah, Garland,
2018 was full of enough suffering for me.
Yeah. Yeah. They suffered for Garland, who, I'm sorry, has been pretty unimpressive. I know we kind of disagree on this. I think he's got a ceiling, but every stat there is tells you he's not good enough yet.
Yeah.
As Stowe mentioned in the comments,
I just saw that too.
He is the number one MVP candidate in your season of 2K League, averaging a cool 28 and 21. Which, Justin, could we have more of a different philosophy and how to, for those that don't know, I'm going to tweet this out tomorrow. Justin posted a screen grab of his NBA 2K franchise, and four of the top five MVP candidates are Cleveland Cavaliers. Are you playing on rookie mode?
No,
with
four minute quarters
with like the scaled up to 12 minute quarters, so it looks like everyone's averaging 60 points a game.
First of all, I do play with 6 minute quarters. Thank you very much. Sim to regular.
But don't you see how that is not like throwing, like that's not putting, like the point of that
I play with Pace Carter. I play with Pace
Carter. The point of that feature is to say, oh, if there were 12, that's about what it would be. So like you need to set your simulation settings to like 9 minutes.
Ah, no, that feels like a half.
This is unbelievable. This is ridiculous. I wouldn't even be having fun if I were playing it the way you played it, because
lots of fun. They're good.
What's the upside? Like what is Darius Garland averaging for you in the 6 minute quarters?
Well, I mean, you would just divide everything by two, right? So he's averaging 14.5 real points and 10.8 real assists, and then that just doubles.
I want you at the end of this podcast to pull up your 2K and tell me what your team's pace is. Is it 170?
it's very, very damn high.
Like, are you playing 1970s George Gervin?
I'm playing all-star difficulty as well, as you asked.
What's your record? Do you ever lose?
Oh, I lose. I've lost, I think I'm like 50-7 or something like that. There's been some close games.
Just a historically good pace.
Yeah.
For the Cleveland Cavaliers, led by Darius Garland.
The MVP race, for those wondering, is Darius Garland. Okongwu is second. Then it's Giannis. Then it's Sexton. Then it's KPJ.
You suck. Yeah. You're a terror. You just suck. And I love you, but you suck.
Yeah.
It's okay, but you suck.
Well, you're wondering why I'm optimistic about the Cavs' future.
No wonder. You've got four MVP candidates.
that's probably what it's all about. Is I've convinced myself that these guys are awesome playing 2K.
So back to my actual point. After that after that important and needed digression.
Yeah.
So Garland's been disappointing, and the drafts aren't lining up right for them, where you might land in this space where they're making enough progress and adding enough young talent to get better and get into the space where, okay, maybe they're the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth worst teams in the league instead of the first. And now you've missed your window to go get a superstar when a draft doesn't suck that comes along. Yeah. So like, that's where I feel like if you're looking for the pessimistic view on the Cavs, it's not hard to find. Somewhere in the middle where I'm like, hey, there's some fun stuff here, and they're just one, you know, pick away from everything feeling better.
One thing I'll say is when it comes to the Cavs in this rebuild, obviously the 2021 draft is a lot. Like, it's a lot better. The next two drafts are going to be very, very good. The reality is Sexton, Garland, KPJ, likely Dylan Windler, whoever they pick in this draft, those guys are all going to be getting heavy minutes, and they are going to be too young to be too good. And with the flat draft lottery odds, I mean, if they, let's say they end up with 10th best odds, it's a bit of a drop off, but you still have a decent shot at jumping up into the top four. And even at 10, let's say, you still have a really good chance of getting value.
It's like we always said, the lottery reform was a good idea.
Yeah. I'm a huge, huge fan of it. The most important thing to me is your ability to develop the talent you have. I think we saw it with San Antonio. We've seen it now with Toronto, where these teams are constantly developing talent. And I feel like with Sexton, we've seen steady growth with him. Jetty, who does not have the same type of ceiling, they've turned him into a good shooter and a nice role player. Should he be your number one wing stopper? Absolutely not. This should not be your primary defender on the perimeter. He probably shouldn't even be starting. But that is a nice rotation player. That's a win. I think KPJ is a win of a draft pick as well. I think that's great value, and it's exciting. Garland, I saw improvement throughout the year. I know people want to debate how much improvement there actually was, but I've seen enough to feel fairly confident that he's at least going to work out as a pick. So with that, I don't think they're going to play themselves out of range for getting another valuable piece. And I feel confident right now with kind of the player development that they've shown. It's still really early on. I think we're going to know more by the end of next season. But I think there's enough reasonable reasons to think, hey, this team might go to the place where they're fun but not good in the relatively near future, where they're at least likable, which is the most important thing to me at this point.
Yeah, I think the fact that, you know, that's the goal for me. If I'm a Cavs fan, the problem is I'm not sure if that's like that probably shouldn't be the goal for Kobe Altman, which gets a little messy, right? Like I don't know when they need to start feeling like they need to win. But the thing is, like, you look at this team, yeah, they have some young players, Garland, KPJ, Sexton, that eat a lot of minutes, but they're not like that young. This isn't like a Suns team like a couple years ago where like the oldest guy was 24. Like, they have pieces that have been playoff contributors, and like, I do feel like they shouldn't be as far away from being likable as they are right now. Mm-hmm.
I honestly think it's next season.
But that's young guards too, you know? Yeah. Like, young guards suck at basketball, unilaterally.
It's so much responsibility, and it's such a huge learning curve. And this goes to, again, what you were talking about with kind of being blessed with Kyrie. Kyrie early on, like, that level of understanding and that level of talent is that's Hall of Fame level talent. You don't always land on one of those guys. That's one of the reasons why I love making the Garland Kemba comparison. Not just because the numbers are similar and it fits my narrative that he could become something. I love comparing him to Kemba and KPJ to Jimmy, because then I can say, hey, look, these guys were all stars and they sucked early on. Because who knows, maybe some of these guys that we already have can be all-stars and can be cornerstones. But we're in the hope stage, right? Like this, it's unfair to me to jump on any national guy that won. The Cats haven't really given people a whole lot of reasons to tune in and kind of pick up nuances in this team. And two, a lot of what we're doing right now is being fans, being hopeful, and seeing on kind of the curve of possible outcomes, the more optimistic outcome. Like that's the way I like to watch the NBA, because this is my entertainment. Like it's any other option, viewing it through spreadsheets or just through the prism of, are we winning a title? That sounds pretty exhausting to me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like I get the flack for being the kind of the Eeyore of this duo. Yeah.
Which is my fault in comparison.
The driftwood in the stream, as you are the salmon swimming upstream. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's funny because, you know, a lot of things we've said about Garland where we're like finding these lights. Oh, he's reading the pick and roll. Like, you know, that's kind of shit that would get us laughed off the air on a lot of national podcasts, because they're just not, one, they're not looking for it, and two, like, it is optimistic, it is hope to try to find those glimmers of light in a rebuild that kind of feels like it's going to be at least 3-4 years long.
You know what, this is kind of related, because it kind of speaks towards the consensus building that happens on Twitter, but I really enjoyed the anniversary of I think it was like a real GM tweet saying, the Minnesota Timberwolves prefer Klay Thompson to Andrew Wiggins. And every single comment, it was manual retweets at the time, were, this is why they're the Wolves. They're so dumb. This is insane, blah, blah, blah. Klay and Draymond over Wiggins, what are they thinking? And I just... I really enjoyed that. I really, really enjoyed going down memory lane to see how the Twitter consensus building works. Because, I mean, I remember when Bledsoe and Bender were the best possible option for the Cavs in a Kyrie trade. Then the consensus was, hey, Boston robbed. Cleveland robbed Boston in the trade. And then about midway through the season, it was, haha, Boston robbed Cleveland. And now it's just kind of, who knows?
Well, now it's like, that's what it is.
Listen, we got a whole lot more than Boston does right now out of the exchange.
I was about to say, right now, more than Boston, the aggregate, I don't know. But in that trade, I think they definitely, through no fault of probably Danny Ainge's, Cavs definitely have the better asset for the 2020-2021 season.
Hell yeah.
And Colin Sexton. So as compared to the nobody.
Imagine how bleak it would be without Sexton. Like, I know we're trying to figure out how he can translate his individual play into kind of more substantial impact. But my God, it would really suck if we didn't have him shouldering that load, putting up 21 points per game. And basically, as soon as he got out of that early season slump, things were a lot more fun.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, obviously this team was pretty bad, and I don't think we should pretend they weren't. But, you know, I just feel like they need to kind of get to the point where, you know, what I want from the Cavs more than anything, and this is all I wanted in the first rebuild, is stability. Stability and a direction and an identity. You don't have to be awesome. You don't have to be a world beater. I don't have to think they're going to win the title, but I want to know what the idea is other than, well, I guess we'll take that guy.
Yeah.
Like feels like, and in fairness, they kind of have to be in the, I guess they'll take that, I'll take that guy stage.
Yeah.
You know, like, in fact, like, you know, joking about 2K, like I'm actually don't tend to play with the Cavs too much in 2K. Cause I'm always like, well, I guess I'll just like dick around. Like I never feel like I'm doing anything organic because they aren't.
Well, that's because you're organic. Not putting up 29 and 22 with Garland.
Well, maybe if I did that. You know, I just feel like ultimately you need to kind of, they need to kind of settle into what they're going to be. And then once they decide who they are and start building in that direction, then things can be fun. Yeah. But in this kind of aimless no man's land where they're just kind of taking the best talent they can find and figuring it out later, like that has repercussions. And that's kind of why it feels a little blech right now.
Yeah, I think the best talent available criticism, I don't know.
It's not a criticism. I think that's what they have
to do. It's not criticism, but they're the philosophy of basically the two picks they took, which is Garland and Sexton, because that's all we really know about their choices in the lottery.
But let me be clear. I'm sorry. I know you're making a point, but it's not even just those guys. It's trading for Drummond. It's a fuck it. Why not?
Yeah.
Because it's like, we'll take a chance on talent.
I think that was a good
value play. We'll take a chance on talent, but it doesn't lead to, like, right now there's no cohesive, like trading for Andre Drummond was not part of a master plan, and that's okay because of where they are. But like that, until they get to a master plan stage, this is going to be messy.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit messy, and who knows? Maybe they draft Killian Hayes. He comes off the bench, and you got Garland, Sexton, KPJ, Love, Drummond, and all three of those guys of the young guys take steps forward. That could be a fun team next year. Obviously, the Beeline thing. I think the Beeline thing is a much larger misstep than anything they've done in the draft. Like I'm very comfortable with the decisions they've made in the draft up to this point. We'll see how I feel in October. It sucks that we have to wait that goddamn long. But the main thing with Kobe is at this point he hasn't made any decisions I hate, but I completely understand the fact that there's still a whole lot more time before we really understand what this team he's building is going to be all about. There's the jury is still out on him. And
I don't think he knows either, in fairness. And that's, again,
yeah.
It sounds like I'm shitting on the guy, but I'm not. I think it's okay that he's doing that. That's what's happening. It's like, it's just a matter of, you know, that's kind of what you have to deal with.
This might be a charitable read on it, but I think he has an idea of where he wants to take this team, but he's not married to any one design of the rebuild or any one player in it. I think he's just trying to look for opportunities as they present themselves. Like taking
Garland, how can you? Like, honestly, you'd probably be a bad GM if you said, I'm going to build a defensive juggernaut. Like right now, like what? Like you can't, you don't know who you're going to have or who's going to be available to you in the draft. And like, you'll actually make bad decisions if you commit to an identity too early. So again, right. I don't think it's
Phil Jackson and the Knicks. Perfect example. We're going to run the triangle. It just wasn't tailored to the talent. No, I agree. I see where you're coming from on that, but you know what? I'm going to misrepresent any points that you make right now. If these guys take leaps, like if Garland takes a leap, if KPJ takes a leap, if
Sexton, we gotta talk about misrepresenting my points, because the Henny God.
Yeah. Okay. So you saw where I was going to segue to right there is.
Oh, I didn't know you were going to, but
no, that was exactly what I was setting up with
T. I'm sorry.
And you kind of stole my thunder. You stole my thunder.
But I'm happy to have him back. That's the great thing.
Well, he's not officially back yet, but we did have a little bit of a disagreement about whether or not he was done in the NBA. I said he'd be back, and you said he didn't. So I'm taking a victory lap, because it does sound like he is going to be playing with the Lakers if this season happens.
All it took was a national health crisis, a global health crisis.
I can't wait for him to sign with the Lakers. Right. For him to sign with the Lakers, then for this bubble thing to fall apart, and for you to take a victory lap on that.
Question: if he signs but is not in the rotation, or does not play, if he plays 0 minutes in Orlando, am I still right? I would argue I am. I said he would never play again.
I might give that to you.
But if he plays, I lose.
I'll give that to you. I will allow that.
But there's no way LeBron's not going to let him play. Like,
there's no chance. They're very, very thin on guard. And
I know we're running low on time here. We're going a little long. But I do want to say that JR has not been good for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
With that said,
he hasn't played in a couple of years.
Well, yeah. He hasn't been his last like year and a half. Really, post new contract, he wasn't very good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, I think it's probably worth noting that he was playing in the spots where he was the most exposed. was playing 30-plus minutes against the most talented team of all time, guarding the most talented point guard, shooting guard, small forward combo of all time as the primary defender. and maybe if he's, 15 minutes a game, he can just uncork some threes and call it a day.
No, I can absolutely see that. I mean, we're always going to root for J.R. Smith on this podcast. We are a pro.
Yes, we are. Hi, Nudes.
Nudes is in the chat for those on Twitch. She came to bother me. Yeah, I'm going to root for J.R. Smith.
Always.
Wish nothing but the best. Hoping for the best when it comes to this whole COVID cup thing that they got going on in Orlando. I'm a little skeptical, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. It seems that they kind of understand, both sides, players and the league, that they're going to be doing this for the money. So who knows? Maybe we're going to have some basketball back soon, which is concerning, but also exciting. I mean, I'm a basketball fan. It is what it is. But this seems like a great place to wrap things up. So big thanks to all of our listeners. Big thanks to Carter. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want to be part of our Discord channel, you can leave us a copy of the review. Send that copy of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And we will send you an invite link to the Discord. So thanks to everybody. Stay safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.